And everybody, please welcome Cheyenne. Cheyenne, come on in.
Hi everybody, I'm Cheyenne. I am zooming in from way northwestern Ontario, Robinson Superior Treaty Land to Fort William First Nation, or Thunder Bay on the map. And amongst a lot of other things, I am an addict and have been for a while now. And I've been to speaker meetings were always my favorite, still are. And I think what I always zoom in on when people are speaking is the early struggles and kind of how they navigated through the maze of recovery. I always found that the most helpful and the most empowering. Everyone has a story. Things happen. Your brain's wired a certain way. You take something that it likes too much. Bad things happen. And that's all different versions of this, of someone's story. And I find that it's easy to relate to, but I think if everyone feels like they'll get more out of just starting at their recovery point, I maybe would like to start there and maybe go back if I need to. So I just to give a brief kind of idea, I had a very strong family history of addiction and I was always scared of it. But I thought that I thought that the gene had skipped me because I have made it 30 something years without it happening, despite, going to parties, weddings, whatever, dabbling in whatever was around, but never needing anything. And I was like, good, I don't have this. I've got other things, so go me. But oddly enough, the first time in my life when things were going really well, and I thought I had found my place in the world where I was finally just free to kind of be myself and felt confident in at least some domains, is when I found something that was sort of what I was looking for, and I guess the gene did not skip me. To this day, a lot of people will ask you, like, why? I've been asked why a lot, why I decided to just buy that one day, and I still can't tell you. I've thought about it a lot. I still cannot tell you why on that day I chose to purchase that particular thing and take it. I have no fucking idea. And I don't think it matters. All it said to me was that I needed something I wasn't getting. And I have to find a new way to get it. So I ended up having to leave my job voluntarily and go to rehab after a whole year of not really understanding what the big deal was and not really knowing that I had a problem. And I found the hardest, I know recovery is not easy for anybody. I don't think I've heard anyone ever say I had a really great time and it was a piece of cake. But there are particular struggles that really stood out to me as being real barriers to actually getting the thing right. And the biggest one was the insanity, if you will. I've always been a person who relied on me and my gut instinct, and just even if I was putting on a front, which I did a lot, I was always pretending to be someone I wasn't. I still knew who I was, though, and I still knew what I was doing, and I was able to call myself out on my shit. But when I was using, I wasn't able to do that. I believed myself. I believed that this was just a hobby and I was in charge of it. I believed that my overdose was a complete accident and a fluke and it wouldn't happen again and it's not a big deal. I believed that, overdosing the day before my dad's funeral wouldn't be that upsetting for my little sister or my mom or my family. Those were things that I really thought. And when I kind of came out of it and realized those were the things that I truly in my heart believed, that really fucked with me. I'm not gonna lie. And at that point, you could really tell me anything, and I'd probably consider it and not really know what to make of it because I couldn't trust myself anymore. And even if I wanted to, I felt like I wasn't allowed to because I thought all those things were true. One of the other things that I struggled with a lot was that I was going to have to do this thing for real, and I really didn't want to. I had a lot of mental health issues pop up throughout various periods of my life, and I always just band-aided them. I did what I had to do to get out and to be functional, and learned how to suppress and learned how to hide, but I didn't learn how to get through or how to manage. And I started to learn that I was not only going to have to do this the real way, but have to start doing everything else and manage everything else. And that seemed and still seems like a bit too much. It seems like starting at the beginning and that there's just a whole bunch of time I've wasted. When I went to rehab, I told myself that I'm just gonna do what I'm told. I have shit to do. I have to graduate. We're gonna get out of here. We're gonna listen. We're just gonna do what they say. And I had heard of the 12 steps before in AA because my dad was an alcoholic and addict. And he participated for a long time, but he ended up being very resentful of it because of the religion issue. And talked about it a lot to me. And that still didn't really impact me because I felt it was, at that time, I felt it was an excuse and that he just didn't want to participate. But, and my dad, I recognize, also had different views of and experiences with religion than I did. I was very fortunate and still am very fortunate that both of my parents, my dad's First Nation, so am I, we're from Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation in Southern Ontario. So we're Anishinaabe, and my dad's dad went to residential school. So the Catholic Church to my dad and a lot of members of my family who experienced that, you know, isn't a welcome subject. And it is touchy to me too, but I recognize that I have a problem with child abuse and assimilation. And Catholicism and all other religions that are related and unrelated can be separate. And that's just how I chose to look at it. My mom was raised Jehovah's Witness. She had no choice and she left the religion when she was 17. So both of my parents kind of collectively agreed that we were going to have a ambiguous household. They weren't going to bash or promote religion to me, and I was free to make my own decisions and forge my own path and do whatever I wanted. And I'm really grateful to them for that. I know not everybody has that luxury. And I don't take it for granted. So going into this program, I felt that even if there were religious undertones of any kind, I didn't have strong feelings. I just didn't really know. I wouldn't say that I've necessarily thought about it that deeply. I didn't want to. I definitely didn't want to think about things my grandfather went to and other religions that my friends were part of. I just kind of liked the celebration part of it, but not necessarily the facts. So I thought it would be okay. And the first time in rehab, when they started reading the big book to me, I remember being very confused and worried about that. And leaving rehab, I was told just to do it. Like, you just have to do it. You have no choice. This is what everybody does. If you're really taking this seriously, and if you don't want to fuck up, you have to do it. And I was told, you know, take what you want and leave the rest behind. And I was like, oh, great. I can take what I want, leave the rest behind. But then I'd go into the rooms and I was told the opposite, or it felt like I was being told the opposite of that. It's like, take what you want, but leave the rest behind, but also do all of it as written. And I was like, well, that's nonsensical. That means all of the same thing. And then I was told, you know, God can mean a lot of different things, but you still have to, like, it still has to be this concept, which also didn't make a lot of sense to me. And I had a lot of people pointing fingers saying, oh, so you're hung up on the religion aspect, which I wasn't. Like I said, I'm not opposed to it. Or, oh, you're mincing words, or you're trying to be different, or you're complicating a simple program. And I was like, I'm not. I'm reading what's in front of me. And it seems like I'm being told a lot of different things. I'm being accused of things I don't feel. And I don't feel like I can speak here. And I'm also told I need to be honest. And I don't know how to do both of those things at the same time. My first experience in a meeting by myself outside of rehab, I was told I wasn't allowed to talk because I wasn't sober because I was on Suboxone. And I've just had repeated experiences of going to these in-person traditional meetings and feeling like I wasn't allowed to be there or I wasn't doing something right. And I would take it to a counselor who would just tell me that didn't happen or to ignore it. And I was like, it did happen. And I can't because you told me I need this and I'm not welcome here and I'm not doing it right. And I don't blame anything for my drug use. I refuse. I won't blame anything. But I did relapse at one point and multiple times closely after leaving rehab and felt like I had nowhere to go. I started being really angry at the whole program. I sounded a lot like my father, and I didn't know where to go. And I remember there was this counselor at my rehab who was so sweet. He was a huge supporter of AA, saved his life. He did it as everything as written he was able to do, but he was one of the people that I was hoping to find who was accommodating to others. And he was like, you know, Cheyenne. And he talked to me a lot at rehab and tried to kind of get me to see it, but he started to get the sense that it wasn't happening. And he's like, there are secular groups that you can find. So he was the one who mentioned that to me. And that meant a lot coming from him. And so I looked and I found the Friday night meeting, the Friday night speaker meeting. And I was terrified because I also did not want to come to a group that was like, still going to say you have to do all of these things, but you have to do it our way, or a bunch of people who are just going to make fun of people who have religious beliefs or bash God all day. I didn't want that either. I wanted recovery not to be my entire personality. I wanted my addiction to be the least interesting thing about me, and I wanted to do this the way I needed to. And I wanted that to be okay. I didn't feel like that was asking too much, but it started to seem like it was. And Eric K was the speaker that day. And I remember just feeling so relieved after hearing him talk. And I was like, because he was saying a lot of the things that I needed to hear. He's not an angry guy at religion. He actually understands very well. And, you know, he has long-term recovery, and there were bumps along the way, and it wasn't perfect, and sometimes it still isn't. And I just found a lot, and then people who were sharing were saying a lot of things that I could relate to, and I felt like I had a chance. I didn't know if I could do it, but I felt like I had a chance, and that's really all I needed. And that was a big step, but I was still told at that time that, you know, you still need to go to in-person meetings because those are the ones you're going to make connections. And I went to a second rehab after my relapse. And there was, this is when I was trying to navigate doing things the way I needed to, but also, told that I couldn't make decisions for myself because I'm an addict and I'm just trying to find loopholes, which I also was didn't want to do. I wanted to do things the right way. So I was very stuck between these the a rock and a hard place. And I have people in the secular meeting telling me that it's okay if I don't want to do the steps. And it's okay if I don't have a higher power. And then telling the people in this rehab, particularly this one counselor who was telling people who their higher power could and couldn't be. She had very strict criteria as to who your higher power was allowed to be, which was hilarious. And I started being really angry at this inconsistent messaging. And I realized I lost my sense of self and my sense of humor, and was just allowing these people to get to me and to tell me who I was, to tell me whether I was clean or not. When I was, I'm taking a medication prescribed by my doctor that doesn't alter my mind. I'm paying my bills. I'm taking care of my dog, and my mom's proud of me. I'm pretty sure I'm clean. And it's accepted by the people who matter. So I am. And that took a long time to actually just be able to say, no matter what people were saying to me. And I remember the last day of this program after this counselor was making me so mad, and people would ask her, they'd be like, hey, I know you said like my cat couldn't be my higher power, but how about my dead grandma? Is that okay? And then she'd say yes or no. And she'd always put me on the spot, say, Cheyenne, have you found your higher power yet? And I would be like, no, man, I've been looking everywhere and I can't. And then the last week, and I was genuinely scared she wasn't going to let me leave this program. And I was so angry and just being so keyed up and having a hard time understanding how to swallow this anger because my other counselor's telling me that I'm not doing my anger management properly. And I just turned on my favorite show and I laughed for the first time. And I started laughing really hard. I was like, this is so silly. Why am I so mad? And the next day, when she asked me if I found my higher power, I said, yes, I did. Yes, I have. And she said, who is it? And I said, Eric Cartman. Was like, Eric Cartman's my higher power because it met her criteria. And I graduated the program on that. And I think she hates my guts. And I don't care. And no, a little cartoon 8-year-old bigot is not my higher power, but I felt like I just needed to get a little bit of my personality back, which was allowed. And there are some hurdles that I still cross every day and just kind of what's allowed and what's not, and what I'm allowed to do and what I can say and what I can't say. And but I found a lot of peace, and particularly in this group, and just how accommodating and accepting people are, and not internalizing everything people say about me, and finding the right people and the right resources for myself is huge. So, and nobody has to listen to me. You don't need to listen to what I'm saying if it doesn't resonate with you, and that's okay. I've known I've had ADHD since I was 6 years old, and I've always denied how much of a role it's played in my life and how huge of a problem and big of a barrier it's been and how it makes everything a lot harder for me. And one of the things I really struggled with in rehab particular is I couldn't do what they were asking me, and I couldn't conceptualize it. And detox was particularly hard because for everybody, your brain becomes very sensitive when you're withdrawing off drugs. And I already had a lot of sensory issues that I have tried to just swallow and would have these outbursts of anger that I didn't know where they were coming from. And they were coming from repressed difficulty with noises and difficulty with textures and feelings. Detox just sets that on fire, and I wasn't able to do the anger management the way they wrote it down because it was coming from these internal systems. So I've been doing it differently, and I was able to find a couple therapists and a ADHD coach who are comfortable adapting their approach to people with ADHD, autism, and other kind of neurodiversity type brains, which a lot of people with addiction have. And that's what bothered me, that I felt very different when I know that it's very common for people with ADHD and autism and other neurodiverse conditions to have addictions. It's actually very, it's one of the most frequent comorbidities with it. So I was surprised that we kind of weren't being met. And there's a lot of things that aren't being met within the program and outside of it. And I always try to bring something to the table and try to say things that are helpful and try to change things as I go along without offending people. And I know what I've learned is going to get me very far. It's really frustrating to have to navigate. So I wanted to share all of that instead of just going through the whole story and what happened, because I think these are the points that it would have been really helpful if someone kind of said this to me, and where your other options can be and who you don't have to listen to, and that when you're not high anymore, you are allowed to listen to yourself. You just have to learn the difference between your addiction voice and your actual voice, because your actual voice does have something to say and it will be right. And I see the time. That's my time. So thank you, everybody. And yeah, I've gotten through the first year so far. Wish me luck on the rest.